The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we are taking on something pretty monumental. We're exploring the most influential book in Western civilization, the Hebrew Bible, but seeing it through a completely new and honestly surprising literary lens.
We are. We're diving into Robert Alter's magnum opus, the Hebrew Bible, a translation with commentary.
And his whole premise is that if you only read the Bible as, say, a historical document or a book of rules, you're missing almost everything.
You're missing its power. Mm-hmm. Alter's core argument, which he spent decades on, is that the Hebrew Bible is first and foremost a masterwork of ancient literature.
That's the mission for our deep dive today, then, to understand what Alter means when he says the profound meaning, the ethics, the theology, it all comes through the literary artistry, not in spite of it.
Exactly. The storytelling, the poetry, the wordplay. He argues that these aren't just decorative, they're the sari vehicle for the message.
And if you lose that style in translation, you lose the deepest meaning.
You lose the genius of it.
Yeah.
And Alter's life's work, this incredible 24-year translation project, mm-hmm. was all about proving that.
So let's talk about Robert Alter himself, because his background is, I think, what makes this whole project so revolutionary. He was a professor of Hebrew and comparative literature at UC Berkeley.
Right. And that's the key. His main credentials are not in theology.
Yeah.
His PhD is in comparative literature. So he approaches this text like a literary critic would approach Homer or Shakespeare. He even laid the groundwork years before with books like The Art of Biblical Narrative and The Art of Biblical Poetry.
So he's bringing this rigorous set of analytical tools, looking at form, character, irony, and applying them to ancient scripture.
Precisely. His perspective is secular, it's academic, and that allows him to really focus on the text as this incredibly sophisticated human creation. It's that combination, deep, deep knowledge of classical Hebrew and world-class literary training. That's just, it's unique. It let him see things others missed.
But I guess the question someone might ask is, if he's a literary critic, why should we trust his translation of a sacred text?
Well, that's the argument of the book itself. He basically says you can only get to the theological or ethical clarity if you're faithful to the literary texture.
Okay.
His translation isn't just a new text. It's an argument that the medium and the message are inseparable. The rhythms, the repetitions, the syntax, that's not just style. That is the psychological and ethical content.
And he was trying to solve this long-standing problem in English Bible translations. He saw two big failures, right?
Yeah, two warring camps, really.
Uh-huh.
On one side, you've got the King James Version. It's majestic. It's beautiful.
Incredibly poetic.
But it's often inaccurate. And for a lot of modern readers, the language is just impenetrable. You almost need a glossary to get through it.
Right. And the other side?
The other side is the modern functional translations. The ones that prioritize accessibility above all else. They want to make the meaning crystal clear on the first read.
And Alter's problem with that is?
He says they commit the cardinal sin. They flatten the text.
Okay, what exactly is lost when you flatten the text?
The complexity. The psychological depth. The original Hebrew writers were masters of ambiguity. They'd use repetition with a tiny, subtle variation. Or they'd write dialogue that hinted at some deep inner conflict.
And the modern translator just smooths that over.
They smooth it over. They resolve the ambiguity into one simple, clear sentence. And in doing so, they wipe away all the richness. They turn great literature into, you know, just functional prose.
So this three-volume work, it covers the entire Tanakh, the Torah, the prophets, the writings. But it's not just the translation, is it? The commentary is just as important.
Oh, the commentary is absolutely crucial. He calls it a continuous seminar. He's not giving you his theological opinions. He's explaining his choices as a translator. He's pointing out, look, here's some wordplay, or notice this repeated word. Here's why it matters. He's basically training you to read the Bible like a literary critic.
Okay, let's get into that artistry, because this is where it gets really fascinating. Starting with the prose, especially in Genesis, he talks about something called type scenes.
Yes. Type scenes are such a brilliant example of their technique. It's a recurring pattern, like the classic one is a hero meeting his future wife at a well.
Right.
It happens over and over. And that pattern signals to the reader that something important, something destined, is happening. But the genius is always in the variation. How Jacob meets Rachel at the well is completely different from how Moses meets his wife, and those differences reveal everything about their character and their destiny.
And speaking of character, let's take Jacob the trickster. The narrator's method is pure show, don't tell.
Absolutely. The narrator almost never says Jacob was feeling anxious or Jacob was being cunning. You have to figure it all out from his actions and his dialogue. That scene where he wrestles with the angel or whoever it is, it's a physical struggle, but it's so clearly a metaphor for his internal psychological wrestling.
Alter points to the story of King David in Samuel and Kings as maybe the high point of this kind of psychological realism.
It's masterful, so subtle. The narrator uses what Alter calls authoritative anonymity. David is presented with all his contradictions. He's a hero, a poet, a king.
And an adulterer and a murderer.
Exactly. And the narrator never steps in to say, and this was bad. There's no explicit moral judgment.
So how is the meaning conveyed then?
Through consequence. And irony. Think about the Bathsheba story. The text just reports the facts. But then you watch as the consequences of that one act completely destroy his family and fracture his kingdom for generations. That's where the moral meaning is. It forces you, the reader, to wrestle with this complex, flawed human being. It's just, it's incredibly sophisticated art.
That's the prose. Now let's shift to the poetry, the Psalms, the prophets, Job. What's the one crucial principle of Hebrew poetry that Alter says we have to understand?
It is the principle of parallelism. Parallelismus memoron. It's the absolute bedrock of all biblical poetry.
And it's often misunderstood as just repetition, right? Saying the same thing twice.
Total misunderstanding. He calls it a dynamic correspondence. It's not a rhyme of words like in English poetry. It's a rhyme of ideas. The second line almost never just repeats the first. It intensifies it or specifies it or raises the stakes.
Can you give us an example of how that works?
Sure. Take a line from the Psalms, something like, why have the nations been in an uproar? Okay. The next line might be, and people's murmuring vain things.
That's it.
It's not just repeating uproar. It's telling you the nature of the uproar. It's not a righteous protest. It's a foolish, a vain, a pointless complaint. The second line deepens the meaning of the first. That dynamic is what drives the rhythm and the power of the poetry.
And understanding that allows him to capture the really distinct voices of the different prophets.
Yes, exactly. You can finally hear the difference between the, you know, the courtly grand rhetoric of Isaiah and the raw, personal, almost agonizing voice of Jeremiah. Alter translation makes those unique voices audible in English instead of making it all sound like one monolithic Bible voice.
We should also touch on the wisdom literature, especially Job and Jonah, because they're so different.
His translation of Job is transformative. Job is so often read as this boring story about patience. But Alter restores the poetic force of the original Hebrew, and it becomes this thunderous roar of righteous fury. It's a radical protest against God. The point of the book isn't some tidy answer. It's the magnificence of Job's protesting poetry.
And then you have Jonah, who's basically a satirical anti-hero.
Jonah is just a masterclass in irony. He's this pouting, reluctant prophet who gets angry at God for being too merciful. The story uses comedy, a giant fish, a magical plant, to deliver this profound message about divine compassion. It completely subverts the whole prophetic genre. It's brilliant satire.
Before we move on to the big themes, there's one linguistic detail we have to talk about. Alter's insistence on concreteness.
Yes, this is fundamental. He actively avoids abstract, Latinate, sort of churchy sounding words.
Like soul or salvation?
Exactly. Because those words bring in all this philosophical baggage, mostly from Greek thought that just wasn't there in the original Hebrew worldview. The Hebrew mindset was very earthy, very physical.
So instead of soul, what does he use?
He'll translate the Hebrew word nephesh as life breath or throat or sometimes just living being. It anchors the idea in the physical body. And instead of the abstract idea of salvation, he uses simple, powerful verbs like rescue or deliverance. It brings back the physical energy and urgency of the original text.
So let's pull back. When you read the Bible through this literary lens, what are the key themes that really emerge? The first one has to be this unity of form and content.
It's the central lesson of his entire work. The how is the what. The style isn't just decoration, it's how the meaning is actually made. The narrative gaps, the poetic rhythm, that's where the ethical and religious ideas live.
Which is a great reminder for any kind of communication, really. The structure and style you choose are never neutral. They shape the message.
Absolutely. The second big theme is complexity over simplicity. Alter reveals a text that fully embraces ambiguity and contradiction.
Like we saw with David, the hero murderer.
Exactly. Or Job, the righteous man who challenges God. The Bible doesn't give you easy black and white answers. It invites you into this sustained wrestling match with life's hardest questions.
Which encourages us as readers to have a more mature, nuanced worldview in our own lives and to resist those easy, simplistic narratives we see everywhere.
It does. And that leads to the third theme, which is a kind of democratization of sacred literature. By focusing on universal literary values, great storytelling, compelling characters, powerful poetry, he makes the text accessible to everyone, regardless of their religious beliefs. You don't have to be a believer to appreciate the literary genius of Genesis or the poetic power of the Psalms. He gives everyone a way in.
His work is just filled with these brilliant little insights. Let's touch on a few of the core ideas that really sum up his whole philosophy.
Okay. Well, the first is just his foundational statement. The Bible is not just a religious document, but a work of literary art of the highest order. That single idea reframes everything.
And I love his line about repetition.
Oh, it's so good. Every repetition in biblical narrative is also a variation. And in the variation lies the meaning. That one sentence forces you to slow down and read so much more carefully.
He also makes this really bold claim about the characters.
Yeah. The ancient Hebrew writers were among the world's first masters of psychological realism and literature. He's putting them right up there with the greatest writers in history centuries before the Greeks.
And finally, what about his view on translation itself?
He's very realistic. He calls translation the art of failure. He knows you can't ever perfectly capture the original. But that's what drives him to try to minimize the loss, to save the literary texture, the sound, the rhythm, the cadence, above all else.
So how can we, the learner, actually apply this? What's the practical takeaway from reading in this very sophisticated literary way?
I think the biggest one is it just gives you incredible, enhanced close reading skills. Learning to pay attention to word choice, structure, repetition, that's a skill you can apply to anything, from a legal contract to a news article. It teaches you to see how language is working underneath the surface.
It trains you to spot the rhetorical moves.
Exactly, and that leads right into communication and rhetoric. The techniques he identifies, parallelism for clarity, repetition for emphasis, these are timeless tools for persuasive writing and speaking. The biblical authors were masters of rhetoric, their methods still work.
And then there's just the value of understanding a foundational cultural text.
Right. Alter gives everyone, religious or secular, a way to access the source code of Western civilization. When you understand the literary depth of these stories, you suddenly see their echoes everywhere, in art, in literature, in our ethical debates.
It allows you to engage with this hugely important text as an intelligent, critical adult.
Precisely.
For me, I think the thing I loved most was seeing the focus on David's contradictions. The idea that this foundational text presents its greatest hero as this deeply flawed, complex person, it just feels so modern and so true. It's a complete paradigm shift from reading for simple lessons.
That's it. It is a monumental act of restoration. And the most valuable lesson is that the form and content can't be separated. The literary genius of the Bible is the source of its enduring spiritual and ethical power.
Yeah.
It proves that to really be well-read in the Bible, you have to read it as great literature.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.